What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Central Virginia Sport Performance Podcast. My name is Jay DeMayo, and today I'm really fired up. I get to sit down and talk with Coach Boo. Coach, it's great to see you, man. I'm glad you're doing well. I know it's been a kind of a whirlwind of a month here, but I'm really excited that you were able to carve out a little time and wrap with us today.
I'm looking forward to it. It's the highlight of my day, actually.
I appreciate that, bud, man. I'm glad to hear that, you know. And we should probably let people know, too, that, you know, this will be the first of many conversations that's going to lead us to April 29th and 30th up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Stoked to have you as part of the event, Coach. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be – the venue's great. Couldn't thank Todd Hammer enough for helping us out and setting that up. But with the lineup, it's going to be fantastic, and I'm so grateful to have you as part of it.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I've been hoping to come for years, and I'm glad the schedule finally lined up and everything where I could where I can make it. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to a good event and listening to the other speakers as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast, man. But let's get caught up with Coach Boo. You know, the last time we talked, it was we were getting into knee rehabs and things like that. But, you know, what's new with Coach Boo down there? And what's been kind of added here down with the track and field world that you're living in?
Oh, not that much, honestly. But, you know, the role I'm in and everything hasn't changed much, but every day brings new problems, and every problem is a jigsaw puzzle, biomechanical jigsaw puzzle that you have to find out. So it's just the ongoing process of what coaches do, which is basically problem solving. You know, that's what coaching is. Coaching is a problem solving process. You know, I always tell young coaches that your problems are your greatest blessing, because every problem is an opportunity to grow professionally. It's an opportunity to learn something. And your problems are also kind of like your vitamins, because they just make you stronger and, you know, and better as you move forward. So anyway, just battling the day-to-day stuff and, you know, working on a couple of small projects outside of it and everything, and just living life otherwise, you know. Of course, the hurricane kind of set me back a little bit as far as all of that stuff's concerned and all, but we're getting back going again.
Yeah, I can only imagine. But I'm glad to hear things are going back to normal a bit more and more each day. I think that one thing, though, that, you know, I'd be remiss not to touch upon, you know, with Adam being involved in the event, and I guess I should call him by his real first name now that he changed it, but Dr. Petway being involved in the event and some other people that have learned under Coach Boo. I think one thing that they bring up quite often is the biomechanical stuff. And I think that that's something that, you know, whether it be fair or not, you know, I don't know if you get enough credit for when it comes to your ability to adapt and evolve and manipulate training and looking at menus based on the biomechanical needs and corrections required in the athletes that you get to work with.
Yeah. Ultimately, I hate to say it, but, you know, we as coaches are the cause of most injuries, because we overlook biomechanical issues, or we neglect biomechanical issues, fail to identify biomechanical issues. And sometimes we kind of take the bio out of biomechanics. You know, a lot of people apply physics to sport and don't apply biology to sport. You know, when I look at biomechanics and the way I try to look at it, I always try to keep in mind that the laws of rigid body physics don't apply directly to human beings. I mean, we're elastic creatures. We stretch, we bend, sometimes we break, you know. So sometimes there are asterisks on those laws. And if you kind of understand the elastic nature of humans and still have an understanding of physics, then biomechanics makes a lot more sense, and suddenly you find yourself a lot more effective, and also you find yourself with a lot less injuries and such. So that being said, I always try to keep an eye on external biomechanic issues and also the internal biomechanic issues. Those are the ones that I deal with most now. You know, I spend a lot of time now kind of doing those biomechanical jigsaw puzzles, trying to trace down injuries and where they occur, you know, following, you know, kinetic chains and so forth. And that, I think, requires a knowledge of internal biomechanics, which is a little different. You know?
I love that. I think that, you know, the idea of coaches take the bio out of biomechanics, I think, is one that people might not necessarily understand, but understanding that, you know, there's a reason you have to take biomechanics and exercise physiology in school, because if you don't understand what the physics are behind the movement and you don't understand what are driving the movement, neuromuscularly, you know, tendon stiffness, things of all that nature, all you're doing is square pegging round holes when it comes to these things.
That's very true, you know, and some people choose to remain and believe the earth is flat, but, you know, we kind of just need to kind of evolve as a culture as far as that's concerned, you know?
Yeah, so if there's someone who's listening to this and is saying, well, jeepers, you know, maybe this is something I need to be better at. When it comes to driving people into learning better when it comes to the mechanics of movement, what are some primary things that Coach Boo looks at when you're dealing with your athletes in track and field?
Well, as far as looking at the athletes, I always try to just look at kinetic chains and such. But if you as a professional want to prepare yourself better to look at this, I think that you the real key to it is to draw knowledge from multiple fields. You know, every profession tends to be a little inbred, and strength coaches are no different, you know. So if I've been successful in this, it's because not really because I only talk to strength coaches or only talk to track coaches, but I've been fortunate to be around really good therapists and so forth in my life. And I've been fortunate to be around really good doctors and those types of people. And I think that ultimately, the answer for a coach to solve these types of problems is just to be well-read in a whole array of different areas. You know, if all you do is talk to people who are in the same profession as you, then ultimately you become kind of closed-minded and you develop biases. And there comes a time in your life when you've read all the strength books and read all the track books or whatever your field may be. And that's when I kind of challenge coaches to branch out and kind of look at things otherwise, you know. And that's the message that I love to send to strength coaches in general, is not to feel or not to create a field that's as compartmentalized as we tend to make it sometimes, you know?
I couldn't agree more. And I think that one of the driving factors behind that is just this overwhelming, like, and these things, these phones have a lot to do with it. Like this overwhelming drive for like confirmation bias, as opposed to trying to find a better question and then looking to learn from someone and then asking who they learned from, right? Like, I think, you know, it's hard to look into physical therapy without worrying that you may be crossing over boundaries when it comes to, you know, what our actual role is. But you need to be able to understand what the progressions are and what the goals are of different parts of physical therapy, and where the doctors and the surgeons are going to look at these things when it comes to your return to sport model. Because if you don't understand them, you're never going to know where you should be contributing and how you should be contributing to it. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to change and do things that are outside your scope of practice, but it does mean that you need to understand what they're doing, who they learned from, who the people are that actually came up with these ideas, what those ideas were made for. I mean, because shoot, we don't even do that well with our field, right? Like, there's still people that think that like we should be doing the video that always makes its rounds, like either the Gunter training videos, mm-hmm. or the crazy single leg depth jumps off the top of the bleachers over mm-hmm. the hurdles. And these people see these and they're like, well, this is what I should do with my under 18, you know, swim team, or my, you know, U16 boys soccer team. It's like, no, because you're taking things out of context. You don't know who these were designed for. These are no, the best in the world, not the best in Henrico County.
No, you're right. And that was extremely well stated. You know, and when we look at all these different professions, licensing is, of course, important. But licensing is also bad in one way, because licensing sets up these boundaries, you know. And in some cases, it sets up perceived levels of expertise and so forth. And ultimately, sometimes it turns into a game. The person with the highest level of licensing wins, even though that person might not have the knowledge in that particular area. You know, that's kind of how I work my way into the rehab field, you know, kind of as a niche. Some of the things that I do have drawn a little bit of attention, and that's one of the things that I'm going to bring to the conference. But what I find happens a lot of times is a person gets injured or has a surgery and they go to work with a physical therapist and a doctor. And these people are immensely talented and they progress very well for a period of time. But eventually there comes a time when they need to start doing things that are specific or sport specific, or stepping back in the steps they retracing the steps that took them to high performance in the first place. And then on the other hand, you have this coach, and this coach is a phenomenally talented coach who can develop athletes and do all of this stuff, but that coach is not really prepared to bring their program down to the level where that athlete is in that debilitated state. So there's a gap there that tends to open, and that's where most rehabs end up taking far longer than they should. And if there's anything that I think I might have been successful at, is kind of maybe filling up that gap in between those two talented sets of people there, so that things progress a lot faster in that regard.
No, 100%. That was a great podcast that we got to do. Jeepers, it might be 2 years ago at this point, but I think that it's something too, and you hit the nail on the head, where it's like you've got PTs and doctors who are really, really highly skilled in what they do, but it might be outside their wheelhouse with some of the things that need to be progressed. And the part that I think frustrates me at times is that should be exactly what we're good at, right? Like, we talk about this all the time. It's like, oh, you reverse engineer the sport and blah, 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 like all these things. And you build in dynamic correspondence and you look at the bioenergetic demands. And we use all these, you know, these word salads to talk about this stuff. But when you know, whether you agree with it or not, that the doctor's not going to clear the kid until they can do specific evaluations at a specific level. If we're not reverse engineering that and working with the PT to help build, again, the general to the specific to help them get into those things, and then looking at that and saying, well, what can we do in conjunction with that that isn't going to A, take away from their ability to adapt and respond to this, and B, possibly help as a byproduct of what we're doing so that their evaluations go smoother, so they can move to the next step, so we can continue to progress. But instead, it's just like, oh, nope, not for me. Or the PT's an idiot. They don't know what they're saying. Where we could really, if we do what we say we do, like we say we do it, we should be really good at that.
Yeah.
But I don't think we are.
Yeah, ultimately, we're all learning from the same books. You know, ultimately, we're all learning from the same body of knowledge. And it's kind of amazing how we kind of tend to end up in different places in spite of the fact that we all are drawing from the same places, or at least curricular-wise, and as far as our professional training, we're all drawing from the same materials. So, yeah, you're correct. It's a challenge, and sometimes almost disrespectful, you know, in some regards, just because of the fact that you might have an insight on something. And sometimes we're disrespectful to the fact that other people just see it a little differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And, or we take it too personally and we kind of get a little butthurt when the people who really are qualified for those decisions make decisions that we don't feel they should be doing. And it's,
yeah.
You know, that's
one of the reasons I love sport. Is sport is ultimately about results. You know, it's not about collecting insurance money. It's not about dodging malpractice. It's about performance, you know, and that's one of the things I love about sports, is the ultimate level of accountability is, are you able to provide solutions for these athletes? You know, so. And I tell young coaches and young trainers and all the time, I said, just because you have the title of strength coach at this school or the title of trainer at this school, that really doesn't mean anything. It means absolutely nothing other than the paycheck. You know, ultimately, if you go to the kids come to you and the athletes come to you and you help them and you come up with answers for them, they're going to keep coming to you. And if the athletes come to you and they don't feel like they're getting the answers or don't feel like they're progressing, they're going to seek elsewhere. And that's just the way the world works. That's reality, you know. And, you know, to get mad because I'm the trainer and somebody's looking somewhere else for an answer, that means you have to elevate your game, you know. And the same thing can be said for any coach, a sport coach, a strength coach, or anybody. You know, when I was coaching really, really good high level, international level athletes, There are always people in their ears telling them, I can coach you better, I can make you do better or whatever. But I guess they stuck with me simply because they felt like they were getting what they needed and they were getting the answers they needed, the solutions they needed, the training they needed. And if I ever fail them in any particular point in time, then suddenly the noise in their ears was going to become a lot louder and probably have them take a different route. And you can't take that personal. That's just the way the world works. And that's why I'm so big a fan of athletics in general. It's the ultimate accountability. It's the ultimate accountability test is what it truly is in that regard. You know?
No, man, I think that's great. And I think the other thing too with that is when you get those situations going where, you know, you have people that are looking for X, Y, or Z, that should make you ask better questions about what you're doing. You know, that should make you not just ask better questions, but seek out better resources for those questions. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's one thing that through all the COVID stuff that has actually been a blessing in disguise to a lot of different people. And that is that you've had the opportunity, whether it's been sort of forced upon you or you did it because basically you were bored because you were sitting at home and Tiger King got old, right? But it's getting people to audit what you're doing and having other people look at what you're doing and finding the holes that you didn't know you had. And whether it be other people on your staff or colleagues or friends and people you've worked with to different people in different realms, right? Like sports med or sports psych, even like, how are we communicating this? How are we doing these things? And how can we be better? Because we all love to talk about how much coaching, you know, the hours and the grind and all that garbage, which is another talk for another day. But I think all too often we just get set in our ways and we start to get comfortable. And when we start to get comfortable, then the kids are the ones that get the short end of the stick.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I always like to put it this way. I think every profession, strength coaches, physical therapists, sport, whatever, there's a cultural norm, you know, and it's kind of associated with the middle of the bell curve, you know. And I just, you know, statistically speaking, the middle of the bell curve is not excellent. It's average, you know, and I just continually challenge coaches and trainers to move away from that centrist thought process, you know, that just because everybody's doing it this way doesn't necessarily mean this is the best way to do it. In fact, if everybody's doing it this way, then that's probably the average way to do it and not the very best way to do it. You know, pulling yourself away from that centrist type of philosophy and being willing to kind of emerge on the fringe of your professional culture, I think is what you have to do in order to truly excel. And, you know, there's times when I've taken on ACL rehabs and had tremendous results. And there's one physical therapist who's tremendously interested in what I did and why I did it and what the science was behind it. And there's another one who's just upset because I was more successful than they were and thinks I just got lucky, you know. So ultimately, who's the person that's going to progress and be the most efficient, most effective professional long term? So I just think that you have to be able to pull yourself away from that centrist mentality sometimes in order to be truly special.
Yeah. But the worst part about all that is that there's someone sitting there just saying, well, you just got lucky. Why can't we just sit here and actually look at what other people are doing and take away the good, bad, the indifferent and grow? Like, I don't understand still why that is. I don't think there's much luck when it comes to things that happen in sport. You know, bounces funny, but like it's not just random happenstance that things happen. Success usually leaves clues.
Unquestionable. You know, I think luck is the most overvalued thing there is in sports. And, you know, the same teams that have the injuries, oh, it's bad luck. No, it's not. I mean, everything happens for reasons. And it's, you know, in football, the ball is kind of weird shaped. So like you said, it gets a weird bounce every once in a while. But genuinely speaking, things happen for reasons. And, you know, trends are trends, and trends have identifiable causes. If you're willing to dig deep and have the courage to self-evaluate yourself, you know, evaluate yourself.
No doubt. And I think that, I mean, self-evaluation and building those different parameters to be able to not just look at yourself, but have a true circle around you that will be honest in those situations is that's a talk we could probably have for hours. Mm-hmm. But I think that is also a great lead-in to the questions that we have put up here for the big three, Coach. So let's go ahead and dive into these here real quick.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about coaching, you know, and especially strength and conditioning, which is really a young profession, you know, there's still some things that we may be doing that we could be better at, or some things that might even be considered mistakes. What is, you know, one of those that you see, whether it be in the States or around the world, and how do you feel like we can be better? Like, what are some things that we could do to correct some of these issues?
Well, aside from the things that I mentioned about moving away from a centrist mentality, with all due respect, this profession of strength and conditioning coaching, what people do is driven by commercial interests more than most professions, you know, and new types of equipment come out. And next thing you know, there's a new fad in place, you know, and I really have found that over the course of time, you know, being involved in coaching for 42 years, that there are some things that are timeless truth and are always present. There are some things we'll always do. And there are things that come and go. And you always have these new things, and often they're commercially driven and whatever. And I try to be the person, and I think everyone should try to be the person who is more critically evaluative of the latest trend or the latest fad. You know, I all of these things come into the profession, and you know, you know, bands came in and this equipment came in and activation came in and all these things. And I'm not saying any of them are evil, any of them are bad or whatever. What I'm saying is I am waiting for the huge performance jumps that are associated with each of those trends, and you just don't see them. You know, so ultimately, when it's all said and done, I just think that we're just flags in the wind, and the wind is cultural, commercial interests. The wind is training fads, the hot topics, hottest speaker on the circuit, and those types of things. You know, I spend a lot of time teaching strength and conditioning course for the track coaches, and we spend our time talking about weight training. We spend our time talking about body weight circuits and med ball and plyometrics and those types of things, you know. And sometimes I get a little bit criticized. Why didn't we cover this or that or this or that or whatever? And I say, because this and that, whatever, is going to be gone in a couple of years. But the things that we did talk about, they're not going anywhere. So that being said, the cool stuff, you know, timeless truth doesn't sell. Timeless truth is a very poor commercial model, but it's the most effective model that we have. So that would be my thing, is to try to stay true to the course, understanding that effective coaching is not a sexy process. You know, understand effective coaching and great coaching is more about being a grinder than it is anything else. The ability to go out there every day and make sound planning decisions, sound programming decisions, sound administrative decisions every single day than identifying any particular hot topic that's on there.
I love it. I think that hits on so many different elements of that could really kind of come down to one term, right? And that's FOMO is real. Like, I think there's a lot of people that are, they're just afraid of missing out. And, you know, Hank has said multiple times when he's been over here at events that, you know, there are many times where coaches would rather outwork opponents than win because they're so afraid of all of that, you know, not leaving every stone unturned and not have being able to have done everything possible, when in reality, if you just stay the course and you do the simple things that are tried and true, chances are things are going to work out okay.
Yeah. You know, I was, I coached football for a long time, and this is an example I use, and it's a little bit silly, but it'll make a point. You know, sometimes you have these hotshot offensive coordinators, right? And if you went to the offensive coordinator before the game and you told them, If you run the fullback up the middle every play, you will win the game. They would still have to do something fancy just to prove you're a genius, you know, in spite of the fact that you were guaranteed success in that regard. I just don't want to be that person.
Yeah. I that's so right too, you know, because it's like, oh, if you just do this one thing constantly, you're going to get better. And yeah, but that's boring, you know, or yeah, but that's, you know, I can't coach the same thing every day. Like, how do you do that? It's like,
you know, what's funny is when I first got started doing this stuff and I first started, you know, getting a little bit of notoriety as a presenter and a speaker and so forth, I was that cutting edge science coach. And now, you know, 30 years later, I'm still a pretty popular clinic speaker and conference speaker and clinician and so forth. But now I'm the common sense guy. But I don't think I've changed. So I've gone from being the cutting edge science guy to the common sense grounded guy, you know. So okay, whatever. And I just find that interesting, you know.
Hey, you know what, though? At the end of the day, the thing that matters most is that you're the guy who gets people better and you win. Like, people can pigeonhole me however they want. If my kids are getting better and, you know, the swimmers are swimming faster that I get to work with and the basketball players are performing at a higher level and are more robust and, you know, knock wood, staying healthy, you can call me whatever you want. I don't care. Pigeonhole me however you want. I don't care.
Like, that's exactly what's right. And that's what's great about this profession too. Ultimately, it's all about the, you know, how the athletes end up performing.
Yeah. But I love the common sense thing. It's almost like people want to find ways to build some new idea or novel thought process or put a minor twist on something or change the name of something slightly so that they can market it. But there's a reason yoga has been around forever and acupuncture has been around forever. And why at the end of the day, jumping, throwing, and sprinting are effective. Like, never, people have never stopped jumping, throwing things and sprinting. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah, there is beauty and simplicity, isn't there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But isn't that what we say we do too, right? Isn't that what we say? We're like, oh, well, you know, the nuts and bolts and the simple, you know, the simplest things possible are the ones that work. But is that really what we're doing? Are we really finding the simplest things? I ask myself that a lot, man, like a lot. And it's, can still be better at it. That's for sure. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think though that that's a great lead in to number two, because this is one that, you know, that I think that the longer people are in the game, this really changes, this perspective changes quite a bit. So when we're talking about continuing education and improving knowledge and understanding and things of that nature, whether it be in the gym or on the track or even outside of life as a coach, what are some ways and directions that you think people can improve on when it comes to, you know, finding practical information to improve not just their methods, but their lives as a coach?
I think that every coach should have a philosophy of professional improvement, you know. And yeah, I've always been the coach. I'm kind of ADD now and don't do it as much as I used to, but I was the person who read research, you know, ad nauseum. I read scientific technical stuff ad nauseum. And I think there's two ways that you can do that, that you can go with that type of stuff. I've seen coaches who have taken that type of information and tried to implement it directly into their training and made their training too gimmicky and weren't very successful. And at the other time, I've seen coaches who have taken that type of material and use it for minor tweaks and even use it more for affirmation than anything else. The thing I'd like to tell coaches in answer to that question is that keep in mind, good coaches are typically 20 years ahead of the research. Good coaches are typically 20 years ahead of the body of research, you know. So that being said, sometimes you just kind of have a hunch. You just kind of know what's going on. You know, you have a feeling of what's going on biochemically, or you have a feeling of what's going on biomechanically. So you do something and you're successful. You know, I just think that good coaches have to have a pioneer spirit in that regard. And then 10, 5, 10, maybe 15 years later, you're suddenly reading a piece of research that supports exactly what you had a hunch of, you know, 15 years ago. So I'm kind of that person. I'm kind of the person who loves to read the research and stuff. And I'm typically looking for minor tweaks and affirmation. I'm not looking for a revolution in training. I don't know that there are any revolutions in training that are really out there anymore, to be honest with you, with science as advanced as it is and such. But that's kind of the way I see it. And I think that as a coach, you have to have and identify a path of professional development for yourself and understand more than anything else, that what you do with your athletes every day is a laboratory. What you do with your athletes every day, it should follow the scientific model. You know, I've seen coaches who, not to be critical, but coaches who, you know, do certain things and they're successful and then they can't replicate it because it wasn't an experiment. There were no constants and there were no variables. You know, it was all variables. And as a result of that, that coach hit it and never could find it again. So I always try to look in terms of the scientific model as far as a coaching process is concerned, understanding what the constants are, what the variables are, because we don't have constants and variables carefully constructed and identified, then we might succeed, we might not. If we succeed, we don't know why. If we fail, we don't know why.
Yeah, and I think that all too often, whether it's a pro or a con that comes out of it, because we haven't been able to delineate between those two, a lot of things happen in spite of, not because of.
That is true. That is true. But you know, that has a lot to do with the whole psychological side of things. You know, I know coaches who are very organized and have a plan and they're able to sell an athlete on a plan. And even though a lot of the plan's wrong, just because they have a plan, you know, they're successful. And I'll be the first one to admit that a bad plan is far better than no plan at all.
Yes. Because if you don't have a plan, how are you going to delineate from anything anyway?
Exactly.
It's just random stuff against the wall, as they like to say, right? Mm-hmm. Again, just another crazy novel idea that, you know, is just so simple and so, you know, time honored that maybe it would work. You know, have a plan. The basics work. There's a reason why things have been around for a long time.
Yeah. Just know what you're trying to do, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so many times we just come to training and we just want to make people tired without a real purpose in place, you know?
Great, great line. Yes, I love it. Well, Coach, I appreciate you being with us here today. Let me get you out of here with this last one here. What can people expect when they see you up in Pittsburgh?
Well, I'm
April 29th to 30th.
I'm going to do something on linking training and rehabilitation. You know, I want to, you know, I mentioned earlier the gap that we often find in the rehabilitation process. Well, what I'd like to do is just kind of give a presentation and invite questions that help us to understand how much alike training healthy athletes and the rehabilitation process really are, and how you as a coach, as a strength coach, with the knowledge you have and the understanding of sports science that you have, can apply it in these situations in ways that'll make rehabs occur much faster and much smoother. So ultimately, that's what I'm going to try to show, is exactly what those relationships are. You know, for culturally, for years, we've kind of looked at them as two different things. Well, here's how we train, but these are the rehab exercises. It should be a continuum. You know, ultimately, we should, you know, an athlete in the rehab process should be retracing steps that they took years and years ago in the very earliest stages of their development athletically. And that's what I'm going to take a look at, is to help coaches understand exactly how similar these are. And hopefully coaches will leave with a lot of confidence, understanding that they really do have the knowledge base they need to be effective in those situations.
I love it. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. Coach, I'm so excited to have you as part for the event, I'm glad that we could finally work this out. And I think that those are some vital things that coaches need to kind of take a step back and really reevaluate what we're looking at with it, because it's something that we should be good at. It's, again, this is another thing that we should have a real understanding of, because we say we do. But I also think that it's another thing that we get real complacent with, because you had one kid who did well, or you had one kid who did poorly, and you think that you know why, and you think you know the answers, when really each kid is an N of one, and each situation is unique. So you've got to understand these continuums and these basics, and understand the simple parts that need to be checked, and how to move forward.
Well said. No, but anyway, your conference has been one of the best around for a long time, and I'm excited to be there. So really looking forward to it.
Well, really excited to have you as part of it, Coach. And can't wait for it. And I really appreciate your time today, man. And we'll be in touch real soon, bud. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.